I don't think I ever want to be called a handsome boy.
It's a weird combo, right?
Yeah.
Because handsome's like sort of the male.
Yeah, like man. It started off really good. And then
boy, I'm like, maybe this is where I'm at in life, you know? Yeah.
She's like, look at that young thing over there.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 121 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and what do I even do here?
I'm Sam, and I'm back.
And today is October 2017. Before we start, we have a warning. Anything can happen on this show. There's going to be profanity, and then there's going to be other stuff that chids should not be privy to.
And there will be phlegm.
Yeah. There will be phlegm.
Adam is full of phlegm after a fun duplication vacation.
Let's talk about
fun dip vacation.
Fun dip vacation. So Adam's been gone for 2 weeks. Well,
yep.
Well, gone for 3 weeks, but missed two podcast episodes.
Gone for 3 weeks? That can't be right.
I mean, three podcast weeks. You know what I mean? You missed two.
Is that true?
Right? Because you missed two in between. Yeah. So the last episode you were on was three weeks ago.
This math contains is the real end. Complicated.
It's inclusive. Yeah. It's like a zero indexed thing. Yep. So let's hear about your experiences. What, for our listeners who don't know the epic backstory, happened? Where are we?
The epic backstory is that when I turned, every year since I turned 28, something has gone wrong. Mm-hmm. My body's like, you're old now, even though I was not even 30 yet. So when I hit 28, we talked about this in the past, my ass cheek fell asleep and then stayed that way, except it would get warm sometimes for like 2 months. So that was the beginning of my journey into
old age.
We had a specific dedicated podcast episode about this called Hot Butt Legacy.
Yes. Which actually, I guess we could see, I think it's episode like 30 or something. It was a long time ago. So this podcast is not only the documentation of our studio, but also our general life.
Just
decay.
Our decomposing bodies.
And then about a year later, again, like close to when I was turning 29, I started having a lot of reflux and it would come in like these really bad waves and then just kind of go for a while. So this was when I was still working from Dallas. And I had an entire weekend I was just laid out because of all like the nausea and the horribleness that came out of it. And ever since then, it's just been this kind of coming and going sort of thing where I'd have a good few weeks where I'd feel great, followed by a week or two where I felt like complete garbage. And at the time, I was talking to my dad about this because I got to see some doctors and stuff, and they put me on the stuff that everybody gets on, some drugs that sort of work, I guess. And I was like, you're just going to need to get surgery for that. At the time, I was like, this is a surgeon. He's
so
a surgeon,
just
exactly.
Kind of a, when you're a hammer, every problem is a nail kind of situation.
Yeah, so I was just like, it doesn't seem that, you know, desperate or bad. So I just wrote it out. But he did tell me, once this starts, it just gets worse. That's the only path forward for you, is this just gets worse. So you can wait until it's really bad and then get surgery, or you can just do it now and kind of nip that in the bud, right?
But you're going to need surgery.
But again, at the time, I was like, okay, I bet that's probably true.
You said, no, I'm a sprightly young man with asleep ass.
No, yeah, not even 30 yet, you know? So I just figured, whatever, I'll just put up with it. And plus, you know, dealing with all the insurance things and everything because of the world we live in America. So I just kind of wanted to avoid dealing with all of that. So I did avoid it. So now if we kind of fast forward to sort of like early this year, you know, March-ish probably, then I had a new wave came on and then just never stopped. And so I've just been having reflux basically for 6 months, just nonstop. But it still was kind of coming and going in waves. So like get really bad and then kind of be, and then it'd be okay again.
It's like if a man started following you around, just every time you ate, just punched you in the stomach.
Yeah, but just a little bit.
A little bit. Just like
sometimes a little harder than others, but you know, just jab. Yeah. And so I was like, you know, I was taking more and more drugs for it, and just kind of riding it out. But because it was constant, but progressively and slowly just getting worse. I didn't realize just how bad it was getting until it got so bad that I couldn't not notice anymore, which was basically like 7 or 8 weeks ago now. And at that point, it got so bad that I was just distracted all the time when I was trying to work, when I was trying to program. I just felt this kind of pressure and uncomfortableness, you know, and it wasn't super painful. I'm probably lots of you out there listening have this because something like 30% of people have it, which is just part of our shitty biological design. so So you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't hurt, but it's very uncomfortable and super fucking distracting. And so I just couldn't work very well. But again, it just kind of, it got worse and then stayed, it just stayed it bad. And so I just kind of adapted to it in that I would just like every day I just felt really bad and was kind of distracted. But that was just my life now. And so I kind of,
that's just how it is.
It's just how it was.
Mm. You know, you're in the 30s.
Yeah.
That's just life now.
It was just how it was. And then so coming up then to basically, I guess, four weeks ago, it finally just kind of hit a peak where it was just so bad that I couldn't, there was not a moment where I could just kind of forget that I felt those sensations. And so then I called my dad up and I was like, right, I need to get this fixed. I was coming up to Iowa for a wedding anyway. And so I was like, can we just, you know, can we get one of your,
let's pair this,
do we get one of your partners to just like do this?
Do and the
just,
old debauchery. Yeah.
Well, I'm in town for this wedding. Could somebody wrap my stomach around perfect, my esophagus?
Know? I mean, save a trip, you know? So we said, yeah, because of course, you know, don't waste an opportunity to have somebody have surgery done to them.
That's right.
But I mean, it was awesome. You know, it's great to work both to have this done in a small town and also with the enormous privilege of it being my dad's practice, you know, so that was a pretty good deal. So I got in really fast and got through the whole thing.
The VIP pass.
Well, let's
VIP
talk about
treatment. Getting stabbed in the belly.
I do want to talk about the fact that there appears to be, and I'm going to call surgeons out on this. There appears to be literally zero experience design for the patient in mind.
There is not a lot of, well, there are some things that are nice. So like So I get to Grinnell, you know, where I'm getting this thing done. Dr. Kuiper is my surgeon, did a great job. He was not part of the problem. I only saw him before all this happened. Then later on, I was unconscious. He stabbed me a bunch. And then I didn't see him until I woke up.
Right? It was great.
So his part of the experience
A
was
plus
fine.
Customer but, service. But
the rest was different, which is, you come in on your surgery day, you know, so you have to shower with this like antibacterial soaps so that you're nice and sterile. And you come in, you sit down in a chair, take all your clothes off. So they get you hooked up in an IV, so they're ready to put drugs in you. And then now you start getting a variable experience. So if you want...
That's one way to put it.
If you want, you wait an unknown period of time depending on what's going on, right? And if you want, you can take a drug that will just kind of make you less anxious. So that, you know, so that you're feeling just like really calm and just fine when you go in.
Did you take it?
And I did not take it because I felt fine.
You should have
taken it. I wasn't worried.
Oh, wait. Okay. Here's a good one. This is what I learned from cancer treatment. They said stay in front of it was their rule. So even if you're not feeling nauseous, if you're not feeling the pain right now, just
if there's a drug,
there's a reason why.
Right. Yeah. Take that drug.
Well, but actually the anesthesiologist I had talked to the week before, because I did a procedure before that to check everything out. He had offered it to me and said that was now becoming kind of like the standard that they do. But then I felt fine too. And I didn't need it. I felt fine going in. There was no problem there. Right. Well, that wasn't surgery. That was getting scoped and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this one again, felt fine. Wasn't worried.
I got this.
And they swapped out a new anesthesiologist who I hadn't seen yet. And apparently the way he doesn't do that by default, unless someone's actively freaking out and then they'll, you know, do it. So then I actually felt even better about my decision to not do it because I was like, I don't think I need it. And this guy doesn't seem to think I do either. So perfect. You know,
He's calm.
I'm just sitting there. I got my IV in, just kind of hanging out. Just
chilling.
And then finally they're ready. So I get walked over to the surgical room. And so then I walk in. The surgery is being done by a robot, which is awesome. So I mean, if you're going to get stabbed,
it's done by a man controlling a robot.
Yeah. But if you're going to do it, this apparently has like the fastest recovery time and the lowest, you know, risks and all that kind of stuff. So if you're going to get stabbed, you know, have a robot do it. It's a pretty good deal. But so you walk into the OR and then you just see the robot over like on the side of the room. And if you imagine kind of like, take like a Fallout robot, you know, where there's all these arms coming out and it didn't have anything on the ends of the arms yet. So there weren't like scary tools or anything, but it was
like
just this creepy
from like a,
yeah, there's
the
just
Matrix.
This creepy vibe because there are arms coming up and it's
not like a humanoid robot.
It's nothing humanoid at all.
It's like
a spider.
It's like a spider. Yeah.
So you see the spider robot in the corner of the room.
Wait, what color is it?
It's just gray.
Perfect.
It's just metallic. Perfect. As cold and lifeless as possible.
Right. So I walk in, I'm being walked over to the bed and I see this thing. And my first thought at the time was actually, cool. It's a robot. Cause I was kind of pumped about this. And its little arms are sticking out. And then as I started getting on the bed, I was like, those arms are going to be in my guts. Yep. You know? And that started to kind of weird me out a little bit, but I wasn't getting anxious. I was just like, that's very weird, you know? And I was kind of, I was more musing about the weirdness of the situation I had found myself in. So I get up, they put me up on the bed, and there's only the anesthesiologist and a PA and maybe a nurse in there. Things are fuzzy because this is about when I went unconscious, right? So I get up on the bed, and the bed's nice and warm because the OR is really cold. So this is a great user experience. Get up on the bed. So I'm just like feeling like really warm. They put these things on your lower leg that just kind of compress and uncompress, you know, so to keep your blood moving in your legs.
Ooh.
Also felt really nice. And I remember thinking, I want some of these for home to go to sleep. Like, this is really
just some of these leg squeezers.
Yeah, it's really good. So I'm getting this like really nice experience. I'm kind of getting settled in. The kind of weirdness of the robot, it kind of, you know, like my memory was fine.
I'm not looking at it anymore.
It's off to the side. So then they start getting me ready. They put the mask on, you know, so I'm kind of getting woozy, but I'm still fully conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then to do this, they have to, so my arms are at my sides, but it turns out they're on these like kind of little table things that kind of rotate out from the bed that your arms are on so that you end up in a kind of a T, right? So your arms are off to the side. And the anesthesiologist, you know,
like you're being crucified,
which is the joke the anesthesiologist made while they were pulling my arms out. And so he made this joke about that, which was definitely, you know, off color and probably inappropriate. I actually was kind of amused by it.
Sure.
You're
a good target audience for that.
I was the appropriate target audience.
Everybody would have.
No, it could have landed very poorly.
He read the room.
Right.
You know,
he's like, this guy's basically unconscious.
Right. And I was kind of, you know, I wasn't fully with it, but I was with it enough. So my arms are fully spread out. And this was the point where all of a sudden, like, now I'm just exposed, right? Because my arms are no longer next to my side where it kind of felt cozy and safe. Now my arms are off to the side. And I just heard a joke about crucifixion, right?
And there's the spider.
There's
the
spider robot off in the corner whose arms are going to be in my guts and they go through your belly. You know, so your belly, which is the least protected part of your whole body, you know, the one
to get stabbed.
Yeah, it's the one that, you know, notoriously, if you try to touch animals' bellies, if they're not really, really domesticated, will freak the fuck out.
Yeah,
because that's how the animals die, is by having their bellies cut open. Right.
Right.
So, and we're just animals, in case you forget. So I'm kind of getting kind of woozy. And all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to get stabbed in the belly. Like right now, right?
Right now.
Like right now. And so my arms are off to the side. I can't protect myself. But I also, you know, I'm not fully with it. So I don't even know what to make of this fact.
Nah.
And then.
Should have taken the drug, man.
This is the lesson.
Always
if you're going into surgery,
drugs.
Take some anti-anxiety drugs. Yeah. Because even if you're not worried about it.
You will be.
Once you settle in, if you think about it a little bit, it is a little creepy.
Yeah.
And a little disconcerting. Then they just threw some drugs in. And I remember thinking, ooh, that's really uncomfortable and hot because that was the sensation that it provided. Mm-hmm. And his jaws were just like, he's like, I got you. And then all of a sudden it was fine. I don't know what the fuck he was, just chemicals, who knows. And then I was fine. And then I woke up a while later. So, and everything after was fine. But so it was like a 3-minute window.
So the sight of a knife wielding robot.
Yeah.
Some would say, unsettling.
You know, it just turns out unsettling. Well, particularly when it's going to be in your guts.
Yeah.
So you know, that could use some user experience improvements.
Just hide it behind a curtain put some googly eyes on that shit.
Googly eyes on each arm, you know?
Or like a Muppet. Put a Muppet on each arm.
Oh, yeah. Sock puppets on it while it's sitting there.
Yeah.
Perfect. Maybe hide it behind a curtain.
And maybe give it some flame decals. You know, make it fun.
Yeah.
Right now, it's just a murder robot right now. But.
It is just a murder robot.
Just put some decals on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is just like, Sam, when you were stuck in the hospital the whole time. Mm-hmm. Everything is...
It's beige.
If you're in the children's wing, everything is super colorful. There's like animals on stuff. And everything's meant to actually try to like create a feeling of easing the tension, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go over to the adult section of the hospital and it's like, you're on your own. Fuck you. Right. This is like beige, hard surface floors that are just like plain white tile. Yep. No artwork on the walls, just cold, sterile, nothing good. Right.
Yeah. I remember the day I went, cause I couldn't get out of the hospital, but they let me walk through all the tubes in the hospital to the children's area. Cause they had like a better lunch menu one day. So I snuck over there. And I remember entering into that area and there's like these sweet, just huge murals on the walls and toys just like everywhere.
I assume there were also organizations coming in and throwing money everywhere.
Basically. Because, yep. Yeah. And then I was like, I'm literally I'm dying. Like I'm building down over.
Yeah. My feelings matter as well.
Nope.
Yeah, I just got a kid. I don't know how I feel about the idea that the way society sort of, like, as soon as you're 18, it's like you're just emotionally on an island now. Like, well, nobody's going to help you.
You got to be serious, you know?
You got to be serious.
It's almost as if everyone's just accepted the fact that, you know, life is kind of hard, truthfully, like, over the long term. But for some reason, they're like, because that's a fact, that sort of gives us the excuse to neglect.
Just keep it that way.
Well, yeah, we lessen the impact of that fact on kids by hiding them from it, and then increase the impact on adults by just embracing it and then exposing it and then making it worse because of all the decisions that our legislators make.
So, you know, it'd be good, like a good way to do the whole you getting crucified situation.
Uh-huh.
If they put if your arms are down by your waist and then they attach them to whatever the thing is and it swung out from there. And then so they attach you to it and they're like, all right, cool. And then once you're completely unconscious, then they put your arms out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Easy peasy. But just that awareness that an exposed belly is just one of the, you know, creepiest, inappropriate things when you know you're about to get stabbed in the belly. Wait,
did they have your belly covered at this point when you were?
At this point, I'm pretty sure I was still covered.
Okay, yeah. That's good. That would have been fucked up if they were like, oh, put your arms out and let's get this, this blanket off here. Okay, yep. Now you're just.
Must dangle this spider over your belly.
Well, they have to do a lot of things, you know, because they got to, like, you know.
There's a lot going on.
They got to shave any hair off. They got to sterilize it. They got to prep
put
all these.
Put the sheet on there.
They just got to do all these things. So I get that the moment you hit the OR, they're just powering through stuff. But it definitely would be better if they just held on, because it literally takes you 1 minute to fall asleep.
Right.
Actually, about 5 seconds once they hit you with all the juice, you know. So if they just kind of optimized for that a little bit, so you just they just knock you out as fast as possible,
and then bring out the murder robot,
and
spread your arms out, yeah. All that. Okay, well.
There you go. Little tip.
It's good
little
to have
tip,
you back.
Surgeons.
It's good to have you back, Adam. So.
Well, this is followed up then so then I had that all done, and I was at basically being hosted by the dads for the weekend, who then took care of me, which was really nice. But they were both sick with a horrible, horrible cold. And so then by the time I finally got home, I was now.
You had that.
I was now on the upswing of that cold, which has basically been unstoppable. So I'm even now, I don't have it anymore, but I'm still suffering all the damage. Mm-hmm. So I basically went from recovering from surgery to having a horrible cold and then being, you know, forcibly quarantined from the office to make sure I didn't give it to anybody else. Mm-hmm. So it's been a weird couple of weeks.
You've been out, man.
Yeah.
Out and about.
Yeah.
Regression toward the mean.
But you said the surgery was very well done.
Yeah.
And then the recovery's been great.
Yeah, recovery's been good. The first few days sucked a fair bit, but, you know, drugs, it's fine.
Yeah.
And after that, it's basically just been all recovery, except I think it was slowed down by all the cold and stuff. But really within a few days, it already just kind of the general sense of feeling, once I could take like a full breath and it didn't hurt too much, then the general feeling there was actually better than it had been for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so right now, I finally started to be able to eat solid foods again, which has been pretty nice, you know. They go down slow, but they do the job. And even though stuff gets stuck sometimes, and it's annoying to chew something for like 1,000 hours before I swallow it, you know, it doesn't hurt down there anymore. It's not super distracting.
You know, all this chewing, you're going to have some dope jaw muscles.
Which is good, because they mostly evaporated since I didn't use them for 2 weeks.
That's true.
My teeth started to feel loose. So when I was running this weekend, step, it felt kind of like they were trying to come out.
Wait, what?
For real?
Because you
hadn't been pushing
them
back
in. Yeah, I hadn't been chewing. You know, there's like every part of your body, if you don't use it, it just literally disintegrates. This is why when astronauts come home, their bones are fucking weak. All their muscles are gone. If they put clothes on, it makes their skin burn, you know? Because
of the gravity of like pulling
Yeah, because the gravity of pulling
normally their clothes are just floating off of their bodies.
Yeah, there's an article or book by. So I just saw snippets of it, but by, was it Kelly? Is that the guy who was in space for like a whole year?
Scott Kelly.
Yeah. So he wrote up a thing about his first few days back in gravity and just how horrible, like just horrible of an experience that was readapting. Because like everything hurt. It was hard to breathe.
Can't walk.
Nothing behaved the way he expected. Because it used to be the case that he'd be holding something. He would just let go of it and it would stay there. Right? Yeah. which is not true anymore because of gravity. And so like
he's just dropping shit.
Yeah, so he's dropping things.
There was shit. What was that astronaut that was on YouTube all the time before Scott Kelly?
Oh yeah.
Hadfield.
Hadfield.
Chris Hadfield.
Yeah, the Canadian guy.
He made a hilarious YouTube series after he got back. Well, because while they're in space, they're always making these videos of like, here's what a water balloon is like in space. Mm-hmm. And they'll like pop it, you know, there's just like a weird ball of water floating. So they just do normal everyday things in zero gravity. And so he came back, and then he just, as a joke, made a series of videos of how things work with gravity. So, right. So he was like, now here's how you fold your clothes with gravity. And he's just like, yeah, so you fold like this and you put it, you can put it anywhere. And then when you let go, it's just sitting there. It just stays right there. You can put more clothes on top. They stack up.
It's crazy.
It'll go anywhere. You don't have to worry about it. He's like, watch this. He leaves the room, comes back. He's like, look at that. They're still there. He's like, you know how you pour cereal? You just take a bowl of cereal. You take the milk above it. Boom. You just pour it. It falls right out of the carton. Right. And he's like, you can pour from up here. He's like, hold it. It's amazing. But you do. I mean, you take these things for granted, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Gravity is the easiest one.
Things don't float away.
Yeah. But I mean, just think of, cause you would have to adapt to all those changes. Just expecting gravity to do all this work for you, you know, doing that for a year and then coming back.
Well, even things like when they shave.
Yeah.
You know, like you shave and the hair falls into the sink. You shave in space and the hair just fucking like
shoots all over
the place. So you need a vacuum attached to your razor.
A really good one.
So that it's just constantly sucking the hair off your face as you trim it. Otherwise, the hair gets clogged up in the vent system of the mm-hmm. space station, you know.
And presumably if you sweat, then just beads of sweat.
They just come off.
Floating.
They just come off. Yeah. They don't run into your eyes.
Space
they
is just horrible. Leave. You know? Why are we going there?
I don't know. It's a silly place.
Space is a silly place.
So otherwise in the news, Sam and Monique went on a trip to California.
Yeah, we did some business. We're going to talk about. But I got back on Saturday and sort of seemed to manage the jet lag. Okay, we'll say, and I know this is a rule, but going west to east is worse than going from east to west, right?
That's how I have felt.
At least it sure as hell felt like it. Yeah. So
you mean if we go from where we are in the Midwest to the West Coast,
correct.
That is worse.
No, that is easier than coming back.
Than coming back from the same trip.
I think it's different. I think it hits you the same, but it lines up differently, which is what makes it harder. Because I remember when I went to India, all of a sudden I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning every day, which I loved. Because I was like, it's my day started, right? Like, yeah, I was more tired later in the evening, but waking up early is never really a problem. When you come back and all of a sudden you're sleeping until like 1 p.m.
And people expect you to be awake.
You feel like you've lost your day. That's been my experience. But
recovery happened. It's a good trip. Very good trip on all. Can't say anything bad, but hopefully.
Now, I have some notes here that you had an experience with Uber. Is this something worth sharing?
Which experience?
It's in my news notes. Also that you were a handsome boy.
Oh, that was hilarious. Yeah, I don't know what the Uber one is.
Exactly. I assume Monique put that together.
The handsome boy story. So we went out to get dim sum on the last day.
Good choice.
We were out in San Francisco with a friend of ours. And she's speaking Chinese to the waitress who only speaks Chinese. And then at some point the waitress comes back around with the cart and just leans over to her and looks at me and goes, and says, handsome boy in Chinese. And then this friend of ours just bursts out laughing. And then she leans over. She's like, she called you a handsome boy. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'll take it. 50-year-old waitress. Let's go.
Handsome boy. I don't think I ever want to be called a handsome boy.
It's a weird combo, right?
Yeah.
Because handsome's like sort of the male.
Yeah, like it started off really good. And then
boy, I'm like, maybe this is where I'm at in life, you know? Yeah.
She's like, look at that young thing over there.
He's almost good.
It goes from good right to creepy instantaneously.
He's not gorgeous and he's not a man, but he is a handsome boy.
But yeah, last week was weird because Sam and Monique were out for mm-hmm. Wednesday, Thursday. I was out until Thursday.
By the time you got back, they were gone.
They were gone. Man, I think everybody else was here.
It was
though.
Sort of a revolving door of so it was people.
A little weird. Yeah, but October's almost over. There's nothing any of us are more excited about than that fact. This is the last week of October.
We're getting there.
We got it. It's going to end very spookily, too.
Yeah.
As it always does every year.
Which seems really appropriate because fucking October.
Because Stranger Things 2 is coming out.
Oh, my God.
Is that
next week?
Is it coming out on Halloween?
Right before Halloween.
Because they need to account for people binging the whole thing in one sitting. Right?
Yeah, otherwise everybody's going to miss Halloween.
Right. Also, we should probably remind everybody that NaNoWriMo.
Oh, yes.
NaNoWriMo.
National Novel Writing Month.
It's coming up mm-hmm. starting on November 1st, which is also next Monday. No, next Tuesday. Before the next podcast episode airs.
So hop into the NaNoWriMo channel in our Discord.
At bit.ly/BSDiscord.
There you go. And you can chat with other people who want to write a book in a month. It's super fun. It's mainly, when people freak out about it, I'm like, it's a typing challenge. That's what you need to understand.
How fast can you type garbage for 30 days?
Yeah. Because it turns out this turns what out creativity really is.
Yep.
Just typing garbage.
Yep. Just type garbage and, you know, and just keep doing that long enough and the garbage gets good enough.
It's the whole thing about, you know, if you get enough monkeys, type enough typewriters, just be one of those monkeys.
But now, that's
And
your
then
job
maybe
now.
You'll write Shakespeare, you know?
That's right.
Like but then that's the problem because that's already been written. So you maybe do your own thing.
Yeah, probably.
But,
that'd be better. But either way, it would be all right.
You know? Yes. All right. Well, let's get on to some questions.
All right.
These questions come from our listeners and they are asked over at podcast.bscotch.net. So if you'd like to get your questions onto a future episode, head over there and ask us a question. First question comes from Saint of Storm. It's very abbreviated, so it's a little bit of a...
You sure it's not Street of Storm?
It might be Street of Storm or just Stuff Storm. And also the second O is a zero, so it's there's a... it's. I'm not totally sure if I'm hitting this correctly. Stuff to Zero Orm says, Adam, you're the only Costa brother whose name does not start with an S.
Yeah, what's that about?
Is this a planned deviation or oversight on the part of your parents? Would you be willing to change your name to... Saddam, in the interest of consistency, which is pretty close to Saddam.
I think it just is Saddam.
I think it is.
I think there's missing
a D.
A D in there.
Missing a D.
It's pretty close, though.
Pretty close.
Well, it might also have been a plan by our parents to spell the word ass with.
Yeah, because that's first the
letter. That is our first initials in birth order.
If we go in birth order, we are the Ass Brothers.
Yeah.
And I do, I do feel like it would be a dereliction of an important responsibility I have, which is to maintain
hold up
the
sanctity
of the Ass Brothers.
Yeah.
I got to hold up my end.
Hold up your end
of the bargain. This period, I guess. Yeah. Just hold up my end, which is to keep that A there. So, no, I will not be Saddam. It's too important.
We're not going to break
that. Adam's got the only vowel in this chain.
That's the other thing, too.
He's unique.
Yep.
He's the one.
Yep.
All right.
Also, I also now have all these like usernames and stuff, you know, like, it would just be such a.
And sort of legal documents.
I know. Just think of how frustrating.
Stuff like that. Stuff like although. That.
Legal documents are far less secure than like web.
Well, I was going to say, actually, because of the Equifax.
That's true. Maybe I should change it.
Probably actually in everybody's best interest to change their names and also move. And to move into the mountains.
What if somebody submits a fake name change for me, steals my identity, but then goes under a different name? So that now it's even harder for me to prove that I am who I claim to be.
Whoa. And it's harder for them to prove that they're you because their name isn't your name.
It's just harder for everybody. It's like a beige hospital wall. Yeah. That's what it is.
If only people weren't just allowed to run off with our most private information and then not secure it properly.
It's just like that show Face Off.
That's exactly
where
like
Nicolas Cage stole John Travolta's body or something.
Did you ever actually see the movie?
Because I saw it and it was fucking weird.
I don't think I've seen it.
Because somehow not only do they change the person's face, they also change their voice. So, but the crazy.
Just like in Mission Impossible when they put on those masks, which to me just, that was kind of like having all the superpowers like in Heroes, you know?
Yeah.
Where it just ruins it because.
Too ridiculous.
It's too overpowered.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and also it's such a Deus Ex Machina sort of storytelling.
Anybody can just be anybody.
You're just like, oh man, this plot point isn't working out. What if this person has been this other person?
Here's my question: how is it that Arya in Game of Thrones puts on a mask and is suddenly like 6 feet tall?
Well,
the mask has stilts on the bottom of it.
I think part of it is
just
mask,
don't show that.
Like tusks.
Part of it is mask stilts. I think the other part of it is, you know, they worship that many-faced god. Who does the rest of the work for them?
Where's
the
question? I mean? Like,
yeah, it's like some real Deus Ex Machina kind of stuff.
But how does that work? How does it work in terms of like if you got this bigger body?
Yeah,
if someone bumps into it, it's still like a body.
It's really just all about how you carry yourself.
But that's what I'm wondering.
It's just all about your posture.
Where in this shell of a person?
So you're saying maybe she's not actually that tall. It just really seems like.
No, she's not. It's just that she's very good at, carrying herself such that people perceive her
as being she's tall. She's still like 4 feet tall, max.
But I'm saying like if someone
seems like she's 6 feet tall.
Stabbed that illusion.
Well, I think their brain does all the work. So their brain is actually stabbing in the right spot. They just think they're stabbing like 3 feet higher.
No, you're thinking about it too hard. It's not an illusion.
I'm thinking
it's not like a hologram. It's just that she puts on the face mask and then just does a good enough job of emulating that person's behaviors that everybody else's minds just kind of fill it in. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So they just feel like she's
people feel
tall.
Like she's that person, and they don't really question it because they don't look hard enough to realize, hey, there's a face glued to her face. Yeah.
I'd like to see that moment where someone's like, ew.
What is by the curtain?
What is this?
The illusion failed. You rolled a D1.
Yeah.
Arya.
Yeah. For people who haven't watched Game of Thrones, there's a girl who cuts people's faces off and then wears them.
That's apparently
just normal just stuff.
Turned, somehow huge, turns into them. I don't know.
Yeah. And then she sort of emulates them. I mean, much I like in Mission Impossible.
I can see how the face would work. I just can't see how the whole rest of the body works. You know?
It's just all about costume. Costuming.
Yeah. You know. It's all about costuming and just how you portray yourself.
You got to raid that wardrobe once you take their face, yep. You know, then you wear their armor.
Or just,
and stuff.
You just be naked and portray yourself as if you are fully clothed in the kind of clothing that person would wear.
You just got, it's all about confidence.
Yeah.
You
it's just about confidence.
It's like, someone's it's like, I feel like that person's naked, but.
But they seem so
they
confident.
They seem like
there's
they're
no
wearing
way.
A robe. I mean, I see that they're naked.
But you don't, though.
But
like,
I get the sense.
Because you can't believe it, you know? So you just. You just assume
like,
there's
how
a robe
could that
there.
Person be naked and they're behaving as if they're wearing a robe?
Yeah. This is actually the thing that they don't tell you about, you know, that whole story about the emperor with no clothes. We tell it as if like the emperor was dumb and all these people for like fawning over him being like, oh yeah, like we're not going to tell you that actually you're not wearing any clothes. They couldn't tell because that emperor was so fucking confident.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really what the story was
the
about.
The story is about, it's all about how you wear it.
Yeah.
You know, it's about.
And there was just this one, guy who was just unshaken by the confidence of the emperor. That's really what, you know, I think that's really the true moral of that tale.
Yeah. And that person just, you know, you can't trust them.
No, you can't.
Really. Who is that?
They see right through you, you know? Yeah. You got to keep those people away.
That's right. This is a good way to know who your enemies are.
Yeah.
You know, go striding around town naked.
Yep.
And whoever points it out, you stay away from that person. Yeah, next question comes from.
It will probably be the cops, though, we should note. And then you also will go to jail.
It will be the police.
Which. You can feel however you want about that, but you will be in jail.
Will be in jail.
So also don't.
Maybe don't do that. All right. Next question comes from Rampandapus, who says, I've been reading Blood, Sweat, and Pixels.
Mm,
great book.
Good book.
Crunch time comes up a lot. In fact,
I
it comes
think
up
that's what it's about.
It comes up in every single chapter.
Yep.
What's the studio's stance? How much did the three of you crunch leading up to the Crashlands launch?
Well, this is interesting. So this whole idea, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it because the crunch that these people describe is so immense in both, you know, scale, like day scale, like it's just the whole day and they start sleeping at the office and stuff. And then also
sometimes they rent apartments closer to the office that for super cheap, just so they can cut down their commutes.
They mostly are in San Francisco, which they probably should already be doing that anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they also keep their original apartments.
Yeah.
But then there's also the duration where they're like, yeah, we crunched for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, because I think the most we ever did.
I don't think that's crunch. I think that's just working a lot.
Yeah. The most we ever did was, I think it was the 3 days around beta, if I recall.
We did 16 hours a day for 3 days.
Yeah. And then we were like, fuck this.
We did it because we were very specifically in emergency mode responding to the most crucial game-breaking bugs in the beta so that the beta could keep going. Right. Mm-hmm. And so this wasn't pre-production. This wasn't like leading up to the launch. This was directly, the game was in players' hands.
It was basically a launch.
Yeah. And the game was in players' hands and they couldn't really give us the feedback we needed because of the state of the game.
And so we needed had ASAP because we did have a launch date.
Yeah. We had to fix it immediately.
Yep.
So we did. So we did 3 days of crunch and then we took a couple of days off and then we resumed back to a normal kind of schedule.
Mm-hmm. Because we usually work between like 40 and 60 hours a week, depending on kind of what's going on, I think just on average. But it's always under the, I guess there's very few times where we've been like, we need to just destroy ourselves right now in order to accomplish something.
Yeah.
Because usually it doesn't actually work.
We only do it at like true personal cost for like an evening at a time.
Right.
And even then, like that almost never happens because it's usually just like, we're just in some scenario where we just think it would be way better if this was taken care of right now. So I'm just going to do that. And then we just make sure our lives are taken care of, plan for it, go do it, you know, or a weekend or whatever. And then that's fine. Now we push something ahead. Everything's in a good spot. We didn't really sacrifice.
So actually, I think about this when I was in San Francisco, because we were out doing the meetings and stuff all day. And then we got back at, I think like 7 or so. I started typing up my stuff. So I've been up at this point now for 12 hours, been socializing constantly and typing up my notes and taking back an hour and a half to get everything put together. And about an hour in, like the number of typos I was making just started like,
starts to go up. You're just getting it done.
And then I reread like a bottom piece of it and I was like, what am I even saying? What is this? So there is a real serious, and if you look at all the productivity research, there's just a serious fall off in actual productive movement after somewhere around like the 55 hour mark, I think is where most people say it is. But even then, like if you do that immense amount of work every week, then you can also hit sort of these just, you're going to start burning out.
So
you keep reading those numbers in there and I don't know what it means.
Well, it's almost always preceded by, here's some big decision that this company made that guaranteed that they weren't going to hit their deadlines.
So then everybody put in as many hours as possible.
Now everybody, yeah. So in the book, there's a section about the Uncharted games, about Uncharted 4 specifically. And there's a section there about how they reshuffled their lead designers. Mm-hmm. And the new designers on the team.
They already had a launch date when this happened, right?
I don't remember specifically, but they were a long ways into production, like 8 or 10 months or something like that. And the first thing that happened was they just deleted most things. Mm-hmm. Like they just deleted most of the things that the team had done because there was a different story that they wanted to tell. And so their point being the game is now better, but now this puts us into a perilous situation where we have to now crunch for like a year to actually get it out in time.
Because they have to now redo 8 months of work they just threw away.
Plus finish the game,
but they don't just have somehow more money to do that.
Right. Yeah.
They're still operating under the same budget they had in the first place.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah. I don't want to throw any studios under the bus, like in terms of, like, making games is hard as fuck.
Yeah.
And the bigger the team gets, the harder it is, right?
The more likely it is that you're going to make work that doesn't get used. Which is actually another common thing in Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, which is needing to burn down huge swaths of work.
Well, we do this too, though.
We do, but not to the scale.
But yeah, but when we burn, because we'll burn, if we burn a month of work, it's then a month times maybe one or two people, right? So it's a human month of time that gets burned. Right. But yeah, when a studio like that burns 8 months of work, times probably it's like
800 months,
50 people or something.
But this is the important takeaway there is that if we behaved the same now as we did when we had, if we have 50 people, then we would just be also creating that kind of waste, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy for us to kind of, armchair quarterback from over here and be like, you guys need to do it better, right? Like we got 7 people on the team. Yep. You're like, our entire studio is like half of the art division of larger game.
But everything does scale up though, because even if you just say, well, okay, well, so we do the same thing. We also just throw time away because you do. And like, this is an iterative process. That's what that means. But that doesn't cause us to crunch. It causes other small studios to crunch all the time. Right. So I don't think it's a matter of just like, are you throwing stuff away? How are you making your design decisions? I think it's a broader thing that doesn't have to be just a function of scale. Well, because I think something is going wrong. If you just have to have your entire staff working for 80 hours
literally
a week
constantly
for half a year to a year. Well, I think something is broken in this system. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's something that we are also doing right now that just can't scale. That's quite possible. Mm-hmm. But that's not our problem yet, so we don't have to solve it. It's not our fucking responsibility. We could point out a thing that somebody else has fucked up real hard.
Be like, there's probably something.
And just say, you've probably done something wrong. Maybe,
don't do that.
Maybe look at some other options without us having to have the answer.
Yeah, I remember.
Someday we might have to have the answer.
There was an article from the, I think, early 2000s about the, quote, widows of EA, which I don't remember reading about this. But basically, there were so many families where the husband was working at EA because of, especially at that time, almost everybody in games was a dude. Mm-hmm. So
things have moved a lot now. Still most people.
Still not great.
But not almost everyone.
But at that point, it was even worse. So so there was an entire group of women whose husbands had gone to work at EA, and they just hadn't seen them in like a year, right? Because they just crunched nonstop. And they ended up writing this big letter and getting all kinds of signatures and stuff to try to persuade EA to, change its practices and stuff. But this isn't me just calling out EA. It's just one example of thousands of studios that take this approach. But I also think when looking at the way that we try to approach our dev, we try to do as little work as possible on any given thing, right?
So, yeah, I think this is, this is the cost of perfectionism.
Yeah, yeah. So we are strict adherents to the good enough principle, mm-hmm. which is you establish...
Which maybe we should change to the what can we get away with
the what principle. Can we... Well, yeah, those are two sides of the same coin, right? Mm-hmm. So,
because you can come at good enough from two directions, and it's important which one you choose.
I don't think that's true, actually. No? I think it's all about your definitions, which is, to me, the good enough principle simply means you know what the thing that you're working on needs to accomplish. So, you know, use an art asset as an example, like the Wompit in Crashlands. The Wompit needs to be approachable, so it shouldn't look terrifying because it's the first creature. It needs to fit in with the savanna, and it needs to have a simple, avoidable attack. Right, that the player can easily understand. So those are the three things that it has to do, and it also needs to look at least good enough that when we screenshot it, people don't throw up. Right. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
So those are the requirements. So when you made the Wompit, Sam, how many Wompits did you make? Like, how many versions?
I made one.
You made it once.
Yeah.
Right. You made it. We didn't do concept art. Sam just made the Wompit, and then he showed it to me, and he's like, "How's this?" And I went through my mental checklist of the things that it needs to do. I was like, yeah, it does those things. Put it in the game, mm-hmm. right? And that Wompit is still the same one that we started with, right?
Right.
So if you think about it from the perspective of like, what can I get away with? It really is the same thing as coming up with a list of criterion for that thing you have to accomplish.
Just because you can choose what that list is.
Right. Yeah. You can also
chose a list that was what could we get away with, but the list could have been very different, where it could have been the same list where you say like has to be approachable, but the interpretation of that might mean like really fucking cute and like cuddly. So Sam might have made the Wompit as it is.
Well, this is why you got to be clear on your language choice, right?
But it's not even just clarity; it's also the choice that you make in the first place. Because you could choose your list could be things that require.
And actually, if you recall, the original Wompit had no frames at all of anything happening, and that was the "what could you get away with" thing. We're like, we just need a thing that jumps. We're going to detach its leg from its body so it's going to do its code. And then
it wasn't sufficient for some reason.
Later, it was not good enough.
Yep.
So we added a frame where its leg was bent.
Right.
Because in exactly one frame, because the question was still, what can we get away with? Right.
One extra frame.
Yeah. Right. And when Seth was forever ago, when he was having Flux throw stuff in Crashlands, the code made it throw from her feet. Because of how it was set up.
Nobody noticed.
But nobody noticed, and so he didn't need to solve that problem.
Yeah. Because also Flux would jump, and the thing, when she threw it, it would come out of her feet, but it would also...
Just too much was happening.
It would be flying upward at the time.
A lot happened.
It just kind of felt like...
You know, whatever.
Yeah, and as we've talked about in the past, anytime Seth was like, this is going to be hard to animate something or whatever, he just put an explosion on top of it or a little bit of screen shake or something that caused the person watching to be distracted enough that they... Just their minds made a thing happen instead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because again, the question, because we could have been like, ooh, we have to make this feel just fucking perfect. You know, just like have everything about this animation.
It's like being naked and convincing everyone to get clothes on. Yeah. You know?
So this is our solution. Well, it's like being naked and then always being like, look over there. Right. This is our solution to the crunch problem is we don't do it because we are always trying to do as little work as possible for any individual part of the dev process. Yeah. So we don't. And I remember reading a section of Blood, Sweat, and Pixels about, I think it was Uncharted. And they were talking about how they had somebody spend a month working on making it so that when a sack of grain gets shot by a bullet, that the grain pours out of it and the sack slowly deflates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what bothered me was that the book talked about this like it was...
A reasonable thing to do.
Well, not only reasonable, but an admirable thing to do. Where it was like this attention to detail is what made this game what it is. And it's like, no. No, it isn't. This game is like, there's explosions everywhere. There's chase scenes, you know. If you just had it so that when you hit that piece of grain, if just grain particles just poofed out of it, that would also be fine. And that would take 8 minutes.
Just exploded.
Or if it exploded and just shot grain everywhere.
That'd be incredible.
You know, with just fuckloads of camera shake, right? Like make grenades.
There you go.
Yeah. But the idea of sort of looking at that level of perfectionism for things that the player can't even perceive and sort of holding that up as like a pinnacle of sort of the approach to take and then being like, why does everybody crunch all the time? Well,
because y'all are trying to deflate grain sacks.
You're doing so much work for no reason. So anyway, can we not? That's why
we do not crunch.
Because
we cannot.
We cannot.
Yes, we cannot make deflating sacks of grain.
Yep.
So, anyways, oh, hey, speaking of which, Menelus says, what was your latest can we not moment? Mine was to not make dinner tonight. Pizza!
Nice. Mine, actually, I had some good ones last week because I was starting to recover. And so I was starting to be able to think clearly again, kind of the first time in a while. So I was finishing up the old code project I was working on before all this stuff went down. So I just had some kind of final pieces of the puzzle I had to do. And that was mostly just kind of refactoring some of the stuff that was already there. So I sat down and refactored. I was looking at it and I was like, I'd put in three different systems for sort of like security things, some other kind of stuff. Then I looked at it, but I kind of thought back through it and I was like, I can get away without having these.
What can I get away with? You know?
And so I thought about, like, I wrote it, I thought through it very carefully because there were security implications. So I was like, I need to make sure I know what all these are.
Because again, part of your criteria of things you need to be able to get away with is not having everything explode.
Right. So you can't, like, if you're using the what can I get away with principle and you're at the stupidity level of Equifax.
Right.
And you should use a different
principle. I think importantly, they didn't get away with it.
That's also true.
So they failed.
Well, except that they did.
They did for quite a while.
And they still have because they still exist as a company. And
well, actually, by all accounts, this is doing great because now everybody's paying Equifax to freeze their credit.
Well, they made it free.
They made
for
it
a
free
while.
Now. So.
But only for like 3 months or something.
Yeah, it was very kind of them.
That's great.
But anyway, but the point is that the good enough principle, sort of like when Sam and Seth talked about nuance about some stuff last week, it's the same deal here, right? Yeah. That doesn't mean do a bad job. That means
have standards and then meet them.
Have standards that are appropriate to the problem and meet them, right? So
And then stop.
Don't just go any further. At that point. And so that's what I was looking at. I was like, okay, so I wrote it out. I was like, okay, what are the implications if I just literally remove each of the three different features that I'd added? Because I was looking at them and they each added a bunch of complexity. So it made the code hard to understand. Mm. And spoiler alert, complexity in code creates security holes because you can't form a good mental model of what it does. And so it's really hard to know if you've left a hole in there somewhere, right? So it increases bugs and increases security risks. So
it may not create security holes, but it makes it way harder to plug them.
Yeah. It makes them harder to plug and harder to find and harder to even think of in the first place. So I was looking what I had and I was like, given the complexity of the system, that in itself is because it was trying to introduce a security feature, but a complicated security feature is really just a security hole. So then I was like, what can I do instead? Then I realized two of them I could just literally not have because I had other features already that were redundant to it. And the reason I put them in is because I wanted redundancy. But I was thinking about it and I was like, this is actually not making redundancy. This is decreasing the security of what I already have.
So I guess an analogy would be you have this giant ship that you're building. There's a hole in the side of it. And you're like, I'm going to plug that hole with a leaky boat.
Yeah, exactly. No, not with a leaky boat, just with a boat.
With a boat.
That may or may not have leaks in it. Who knows?
You don't know.
I could have just put a fucking patch over it, you know, that I can just look at and be like, yep, no holes in that patch. But no, I put
instead,
a boat
you
in
built
there.
An entirely new boat and then tried to fit it into the wedge it into the hole.
Is it sealed all the way around? Who knows? It's the shape of a boat, you know? Does it have holes in it? We have to check all of it. So I was able to cut out completely two features I put in. Mm. And then when I had to go design a new feature, my original design, I was like, I bet I can make this simpler, you know? And so I just gutted it and took out basically everything. And then all of a sudden I just had this beautiful, I cut down hundreds of lines of code into something like 100. Hmm. Just like cut it all down. The complexity went way down. The mental model of my brain was completely clear.
It's elegant.
I was able to think through all the problems that could come up. And I was just like, oh my God, this feels so good. And, although a lot of that was, I was so pumped I was able to think again for the first time in a while. So you
know. That's pretty good.
But the first thing I did when I was able to think was embrace can we not.
Well, we used to talk about process improvement in the studio, but really process improvement is just eliminating steps.
Oftentimes, yeah.
That's basically, because like you're at A, you're always starting at A, and you need to get to Z, right? And so as long as Z happens, then the rest of it doesn't really matter. Right. That's like you got a destination that you're trying to accomplish. You could go A, B, C, D, E and just walk your way through it. Or if you could just go straight to Z and not give
this
a
fuck. Reminds me of that Event Horizon movie where they ended up in like a hell ship because of folded space.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to be careful to avoid the hell
ship. You want to fold your point on top of itself, you know?
If you improve your processes enough, you do summon a hell ship. Yeah. I think
then you could just use it to plug the hole
in your security problems.
Right.
This works. Yeah, this checks out.
So I think part of that for me, I can't talk about specifics
because
Scuffle Buddies.
Yeah, Scuffle Buddies.
Mm-hmm. So many secrets about Scuffle Buddies.
But we were working on an interface for the game, and in order for me to get the,
wait, is that a spoiler though that there's an interface with it?
We'll edit that out.
Okay, cool.
So working on an interface for the game, and in order to get that interface to appear, there was a series of steps that I had to go through that was like 45 seconds long. Some of which involved like a test of skill, and some of which was like a test of memory and all this other shit.
You had to talk to like a troll thing by a bridge. Yep, and it asked questions.
I had to tell it my three wishes, you know, all of this shit. And then finally that interface comes up because that's the part of the game where the interface is. And so, my can we not moment was, yeah, I'm not going to do that shit here. So I just created a hotkey that like, yes, it took me about 15 minutes to recreate all the conditions that needed to be there for that interface to be usable. Mm-hmm. But you know, I did it. So it shortened that feedback loop from about 45 seconds down to about 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. So then I was able to just jam on it all day long, and I had a perfectly tight feedback loop and didn't have to fuck around with that anymore.
That's super nice. Mm-hmm. I think my most recent one, less work related. So my dog shits in the yard, as most dogs do. Mm-hmm. And
that's,
I pick it up.
That's good.
Because I'm a good citizen. Her neighbors do not pick up their lab's poops, and they're like the size of a child. It's disgusting. So the problem here is that every Tuesday night when I get home, I roll the trash cans out front for the garbage to pick them up, right? And then Wednesday morning, when I take the dog out, dog craps, and then I'm out there, out back, and there's no trash cans for me to put the dog crap in. Mm.
You need a little tiny trash can.
At this point, I have a dog with me, and I can't just go up because he's still a maniac, and he'll probably attack someone. So I have to go back through the house, and then usually just set this bag of shit, you know, like out, like near the door outside, uh-huh. But like, I'm not going to go all the way out. I'll just take them away. So that's been happening for a while. And last night I took the dog out, and then I was like,
could I not
fucking do that? And I realized I could just take the trash cans up in the morning. I don't need to do it. I just don't need to do that because I get up so early.
Yep.
Gives a crap. Literally.
The dog, so
the dog does.
Which was the whole problem.
So that was my real life.
There's another workaround for that too. I discovered we were trying to find a cat sitter when I was off getting stabbed in the guts, which is that there are several companies here, the ones who do dog sitting and stuff, mm-hmm. who as part of like, you can pay them just to come pick up the dog poop out of your yard.
How much is it?
Real cheap. No, that's the thing. It was very cheap. So
I don't feel ethically okay with that.
But you may want to do it for your neighbors as like a present. Just to
that's like your, those passive aggressive.
That's those passive aggressive shit.
What, I mean, you a gift.
Somebody's picking the shit up out of your head. I gotta say, having a dog, the amount of time that you spend now and like in your life carrying around sacks of shit is just way higher than you.
Than it should be, probably, frankly.
This is the number one reason I'm uninterested in getting a dog.
Yeah.
And by uninterested, I mean actively disinterested.
My dog is super cute.
So. Yeah. It's,
I mean, dogs, to me, it's, I have, it's I don't argue cost. At all. The dogs are cute, they're good companions. They're fun to hang out with, et cetera.
All over everything.
But yes, there's this very high cost of poop, you know, and for me, it does not out, it does outweigh
mm-hmm.
basically everything in the universe.
Mm.
Well, there's that, and everybody's, also, you can't just, like, go somewhere.
So there's one problem I have with it is that, so there's this thing called echoic memory in psych terms, and there's also visual.
Wait, echoic?
Echoic. So it's like, if someone says something to you, you essentially can repeat it back. There's like a little sort of cache that happens, and so it's sort of sitting in there for
this
a
happens
moment.
In movies all the time. You know, somebody says something important in the middle of the movie, and then later during a pinnacle moment, the person replays that inspirational
maybe
phrase.
Sure, but it's mainly like it's mainly supposed to be a short-term memory thing for various
sensations. That person's ghost.
Yeah. So the problem is the short-term memory I have for the sensation of picking up warm poop. Sometimes it like, you know, it's like it lingers. I don't know if this happens to you. Like lingers on your hand.
No,
afterward,
it just like feels like the it was feeling. There.
I just always would just wash my hands like crazy. Even though I mean, me too. Like there's a plastic bag and everything, but like, I'm not.
I always do it too, but it's always like you just there's a memory in my hand, and I just do not like it.
As much
slightest.
As I hate to say it, that's you get used to it. If once you've been picking up poop for a year, it's just part.
That's just your warm poop holding hand. Just, you know?
It's your poop hand.
Take my poop hand.
Take my poop hand. All right. Next question comes from DVXme. I don't know if it was said before, but why did you remove the butter up a friend feature from some of your games?
We weren't allowed to have it on Apple.
Turns out we've been violating store policy for like a year.
Yep.
Because that made us like a store sort of or something.
Because we're basically selling copies of the game through the game.
But two other, I don't know. They have some policy that isn't like exactly what we were doing. But we definitely fell right in the definition of that. Said we couldn't.
We did that.
They were like, you can't
do that.
But it was interesting because we'd been doing it for like a year, I think.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we went to submit a patch, which always has to go back through the review process. And of course, every time you go through review at Apple, you just get a different person who's reviewed it. So their knowledge of the rules is different than the next person's. And also what they'll tolerate is different.
Very good knowledge. This
person needed at least this part.
Much better than we did.
Yep. And and they were just like, no, you can't do this. And we're like, what? Why the fuck not? We've been doing it for a year.
Think we might have made the mistake of being like, but we have it in all of our other games. And they're like,
well, you're going to have to fix that.
Like, oh, shit.
So on top of that, it really didn't work. No. So there's also that.
Yeah, how many do we sell? I remember we looked at it once
for a while, but it was really embarrassing.
It's amusingly low.
Considering the millions of players in our free games that we sold, like maybe 100 butter ups.
I would say without a doubt, it did not offset the dev cost of me making it possible to do that.
Yeah,
definitely.
And then everybody else like making UIs that made it in the game and stuff. Not a chance in hell it was worth doing, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
But indeed. The experiment, some would say, was worth it.
Right. It's just the cost of tuition. Actually, yeah.
Experiments have a cost.
It's about the journey.
You gotta learn sometimes, and the only way to learn is by fucking up. Mm-hmm. It's the only way.
Yes.
Just gotta enjoy it.
All right, next question comes from MK, who says, or IMK, who says, hey, BS team. First off, thanks for the note with my order. Loved it. Is there any good YouTube tutorials or some presentations you have done explaining the possibilities of Atom? So this is a two-part question. One is a comment about our dope new merch shop.
Yeah. Shop.bscotch.net.
Which is at shop.bscotch.net. And it's full of delicious goodies.
Mm-hmm.
And Monique was cool enough to handwrite notes to our first round of orderees.
I think that's what they're called.
Orderies.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting real ordery. Yeah. And so she wrote them notes to calm them down. So that's cool.
I think we had another six orders or something come out this weekend.
Eight.
Whew.
Yeah, we're just,
just merch.
It's just flying off the rails. I think we are sometime in the near future. We're going to start actually like opening up the shop beyond the podcast listeners. Yes. So that'll be interesting to see.
Yep.
So then the question is, are there any YouTube tutorials or some presentations that we have done explaining the possibilities of Atom, which is a open source text editor?
Nope. All I know is that I just got the screen shake mod. That's all I needed.
It's got particles.
All I wanted
too.
It for.
I think it's called particles. Power mode.
Yep. You could turn on the counter. So and you could make it swear at you.
Yep.
That's what I did. So pretty when good. I hit every 10 words I type or something like that, then it's like, fuck yeah.
So you get combos.
Yeah, I get
like
combos.
The faster you type.
Because I like being crass. So it's just where I'm at.
Yeah, I did it for a while. I found it was very fun when I didn't want to type something. But then as soon as I got over that hump, it was very distracting.
You know what's weird? I think I typed like a 3-page thing on it once, completely forgot
that it was doing
because
it.
Because also, you know, especially if you're typing a big thing, you'll be thinking for a while. And then you'll come back to it and start typing again after you take a little break. And so the combo counter runs down.
Oh, yeah.
And so then you build up your combo again.
And you come back and you're panicked because you're like, oh, fuck, I'm losing my combo.
It might be actually super useful for NaNoWriMo, honestly, as far as hit a cadence, you know?
There's another thing, which I think might be a web service. I'm not sure. I can't remember what they call it. It's like there's some name for the mode that you can write in, which if you stop typing, there's like a timer that starts going down, right? So every time you stop typing, there's kind of cooldown activates. If at the end of that you haven't typed anything yet, it just starts deleting. It just starts deleting stuff, starting where you are.
What?
And trying to, I guess, encourage you to not
just keep going,
you know?
That sounds like a great NaNoWriMo.
That's like NaNoWriMo hardcore mode.
It's very hardcore.
It's like, you know, when you make your character in Diablo and if it dies, then it's dead forever. Well,
I mean, especially if like something happened. If you're like hanging out like and you drop your coffee cup on the ground, you're like, fuck, I gotta go clean this up before I stain my carpet forever.
You don't have to clean it up. Yeah. You gotta get your writing.
Okay, wait. So I can type about 115 words per minute. Let's just say 100 for... Make it easy math. If I wanted to type my NaNoWriMo book in one go...
Whatever 50,000 divided by 100 is.
Well, maybe it's so 16 minutes, 17 minutes per day normally. So times 530.
Minutes. That's under 10 hours.
Yeah. No, this is a good day.
You could write a whole novel Like 9 hours. That's like one work day.
If you didn't stop to think, though.
Something in the shape of an envelope. I don't know.
Listen, you know. Listen, there's no law that defines what is or is not a novel.
That is true.
You know, it's just a pile of words.
The critics' reviews back. It's very.
It starts out coherent.
It started out coherent.
This is the most somewhat coherent novel-shaped text I've seen.
But this is actually a super important point, though, which is that it sounds like an unbelievably complicated task to, you know, to write that many words. But if you do think about it as a typing exercise,
yeah. Or more importantly, if you don't think about it,
right? If you don't think about it at all, and just write, it is something like 9 hours worth of typing.
And that's also assuming that somehow you don't just become. Because I like sometimes if I'm typing a really long thing at that speed, my hands get real fatigued. You know?
Yeah.
Like if I'm typing at that speed for like 15 minutes.
Well, I think the thing is I've never had to type at that speed for long because
you usually think about stuff. Well, you're done. Right?
Yeah. What I'm saying is usually I'm done typing literally anything in 5 minutes. But if I'm doing that for 9 hours. I'm not gonna do NaNoWriMo. I'm gonna do NaNoWriMo Weekend.
NaNoWriMo.
Just do that.
Yeah.
Just to do it all in 1 weekend. Just fucking crank
just
that shit
out. Just do it. You know, like why are we fucking around with this? Like why are we stretching this thing out over a month? It only takes 9 hours.
What's the big deal? But it is a question of how much of the time is just spent, you know, thinking about what you're going to write?
Too much.
Ideally zero.
But it was true back when I did mine, you know, fucking forever ago, that it was actually the case. I did a little bit of planning before each writing session just to think of like, what am I going to hit today, you know?
It's a waste of time.
No, but only a little bit. And then I was just writing, but there were still little phases where I, you know, pause for 30 seconds or pause for a minute or whatever.
Too much.
but it is a question because I didn't think about it in those terms to ask the question of like,
can I not?
Well, either can I not, or just what is my division of labor between just instantaneously typing the thoughts that are happening versus planning a little bit and then starting to instantaneously type thoughts that are happening? Because it is still good to have like some groundwork, you know, like a little bit of just reoutlining.
You don't know that though, because you've never typed without groundwork.
I did it basically without thinking, and I got it done twice, and it was very fun.
Well, think about. So we talk about our design process and how it's very iterative and freeform, and we essentially have no fucking idea what we're doing, and then eventually we just keep sort of slapping it around until the game pops out.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but that's about editing. That's not about writing. Because writing, if we're talking about like just straight writing without thinking about it, then all you're doing is making the thing that you now need to slap around.
Right. Well, except in a game, you know, a lot of it is there are systems that constantly interact with each other. Yeah. In writing, you're creating a sequential narrative. Yes, and yes, it does refer
back. But a sequential
back,
narrative, yeah, is a bunch of stories that all interact with each other.
Yeah. And yeah. so really what you got to do is keep in your mind, like, what have I said so far? Then how do I just keep moving forward? Right.
Yep.
You got to write your book in such a way as it never refers back to it.
it doesn't allow the past to change.
So you need to write it in the present tense, I think is the important point,
because you could just narrate yourself typing.
You're just living in the moment. So I did have the idea. I don't know if we talked about this before, but I had the idea of writing a book that helps people sleep.
What are you talking about?
So I like to read before bed.
Okay.
But I always get so amped up. You know?
So, all right.
I want a book that's so fucking boring. that's its purpose, right? That it's not, because also like Adam said that sometimes he'll read really technical books before he falls asleep so that it helps him fall asleep, because you have to really like focus.
It takes a lot of mental effort.
Yeah. But the problem is there's actually useful stuff in there.
Yeah.
You know,
I stop reading when I start to miss things.
Yeah.
Cause that also means that I'm tired enough now that I can go to sleep.
And so what I want to do is I want to make a book that's so boring, but also useless, right? Okay. That the whole point of it is to read it before bed to help yourself just fade into nothingness.
I bet if you follow this
I bet I can do it.
I think you're making an incredibly boring book in just 1 weekend.
I think I can do it.
It should just be you narrating your weekend. But all you're doing that weekend is typing.
So well, my problem is
it's
like,
just you, Derek, vision I had you're just the, looking around, typing about how, exactly the thoughts that are going through
your
mind.
But the thing is, you're going to run out of stuff real quick.
No, no. The vision I had for this book
was, you're running out of interesting stuff.
I've thought about this. The vision I had for this book was to essentially just narrate through the day of the life of just a person just going about their business, going to work, you know.
Literally nothing happens.
But to do it like Proust, you know, like just excruciating detail for no fucking reason in every single dimension. Mm-hmm. So we're talking like the book starts with this guy's alarm going off, right? And then 20 fucking pages later, he finally turns it off. Because
and all of those 25 pages were you describing the sound of the alarm.
Right. And also describing like how he feels about the sound of the alarm and like him deliberating whether he should hit the snooze or not. And then kind of doing the mental calculus of, you know, like if he sleeps for 5 more minutes, how much time will he take off of.
I'm getting like, sleepy already.
Maybe I won't have time to shower this morning, but I can shower tonight, I guess. So that's probably okay.
Yeah.
What am I going to do for breakfast, though?
Exactly.
You're killing me.
Exactly. And then he's going to like go through his inventory of what he remembers being in the kitchen.
This sounds like a really good novel-shaped piece of text. Yeah,
I could pound that thing out in 9 hours. Yeah,
and then we got to find somebody who talks in the most monotonous way possible to narrate it. Because
like
I think this would be best, yeah, soothing monotonous. Because this would be best as an audiobook. Because there has to be no surprise.
So we need
no surprise at all. It's boring as fuck. No surprise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What celebrity can we bring in
who could have a really good, like, but soothing, but not interesting? It's a hard combo.
Yeah, I don't know.
To find.
I think, well, not. Morgan Freeman, I mean, is very soothing.
I mean,
he's
the always the voiceover guy. You know what we should do? We should figure this out but for also next it's week.
Interesting. Yeah. We should. All right. We'll figure this out next week. We'll figure this out next week. We'll talk about which celebrity is going to narrate our put yourself to sleep most boring, useless book in the universe.
Well, novel shaped text.
Novel shaped. novel sized collection of words.
Collection of pages that's technically bound like a book. So that's all we have time for this week. We'd like to thank our studio wrangler, Monique, and our producer, Fat Bar, for putting this episode together, and the Beast Got You Dev team, Andy, Tifa, and Sher, for having our backs while we record this podcast. Special thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, hop over to our Discord server at bit.ly/BSDiscord. Come say hey. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, check out our shop, which is over at shop.bscotch.net. Or if you'd like to adorn us, our bodies, with your merch... We've got a mailbox. So if you want to send us something, head on over to mailbox.bscotch.net. Also, we depend on great reviews to get new listeners. So if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, help us out by going to bit.ly/CWBApple and give us a 5-star review. It'll help other people find us and it'll help us spread the word about the podcast all over the internet. So thank you all for listening and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. Bye.